I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
You're about to listen to an interview which our socios enjoyed in full 12 months ago. If you'd like to listen to these exclusive monthly big interviews on the day that they're released, it's time to join us. That means supporting us. It means the price of a pint per month. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Go now, join and become a socio. That means you'll get that extra big interview every month, and you'll also unlock our entire archive straight away, all for £2.99 a month. It's the best deal in town, baby, and we need you. Hello, socios. New year, new big interview, just for you. This month, it's Roberto Di Matteo, with whom I spent an entertaining couple of hours in London last month. Robbie came to the table ready to talk, and he brought insight, analysis, great stories, and plenty of laughs. You'll hear him reflect on the glory era of Serie A, where he was a big part of a swashbuckling Lazio side who scored goals for fun and should really have won the trophies to back up their talent. Robbie is brilliant on his time at Chelsea under Ruud Gullit. At Stamford Bridge, he added goals to his game and medals to his collection. There were famous goals, not least in the FA Cup final against Middlesbrough, and so-called sexy football under the extremely charismatic Gullit. He shed a tear, he laughed uproariously, told anecdotes that he's never shared before, including one about walking out on Chelsea. I guarantee you'll enjoy listening to this as much as I did recording it. Have fun. I want to start this interview with Roberto Di Matteo with a question that's puzzled me since the first time I saw you. I watched you play in the Olympic Stadium by fluke. I didn't come 23 years ago to plan this interview, but I thought, wow, look at Lazio go. They're playing sensationally. And it happened that the weekend I chose the home game was against Fiorentina, and you won 8-2 against Claudio Ranieri's...
94 that was, yeah.
Was in 94. That made me think even more excitedly about Serie A. It's the first time I saw you playing there for a followed your career subsequent. So let me ask you this. Why would a talented midfield player think about walking away at the stage that you joined Chelsea from, was it the golden era of Serie A? When you look at your side, Juve, Milan, Inter, Samp at minimum, plus Parma, all fighting for domestic supremacy, winning European trophies, and you're right at the heart of it. Why would you think about leaving that?
Well, I need to give you a little bit of background why I made that decision, but it was certainly a very good era for the Serie A. The 90s were very, very good for the Serie A. You had a lot of domestic businessmen that were looking to get a bit more exposure, and so they would buy football clubs and then invest heavily into the clubs and buy players around the world.
Cragnotti, for example.
Lazio was taken over by Sergio Cragnotti. I think it was 92. And so it was an upcoming club, ambitious club. He was very ambitious. So I found myself 93 with this club that, you know, wanted to be involved in European football. And over the years, you know, there was like a five-year plan probably to win the Serie A. So I joined 93. The manager was Dino Zoff, the legendary Dino Zoff, who was like a father figure to me, because, you know, he kind of probably saw me as a little boy, young boy, coming from Switzerland, you know, into a big city, capital of Italy. So he straight away from the first meeting, he put his arm around me and made me feel very welcome and comfortable. And that gave me also the confidence. I was pretty confident myself, but knowing that the manager actually kept an eye out for you, that was a good first step into the club. So then the second season, we had Zeman, and that's probably one of those games that you saw.
It was
a very attacking team, 4-3-3, with, you know, the two number eights overlapping the wing backs and the full backs overlapping the number eight. So it was a full attacking team, very offensive minded. And I was playing as a number six in front of the back four. I was a holding player, holding midfield player, and I was basically the third defender because everybody was attacking. So the two centre backs and me, we were basically the ones that were staying behind the balls.
The fullbacks were almost wingers.
Oh yeah, they had to go. Every time we were like in possession of the ball attacking, the manager demanded that if the winger was cutting inside, either the eight or the fullback had to overlap to give the whip. Yeah. So from a learning perspective, for me as a player, that was an incredibly steep learning curve, you know, from going from a more traditional coach with Zoff 3-5-2 to a very modern offensive-minded coach like Zeman with a 4-3-3 formation. And that really impressed me as well. And we were scoring, you know, goals for fun in those 2 years that I was there with this coach. And
can I help you with your memory? Because you finished your final season, not going back to Waitley, but you're talking about scoring goals for fun. You finish that season by winning the derby 2-0 in the Olympic Stadium against Roma, going to Turin and beating Juventus, the Juventus of Lippi, 3-0. The next game is a 4-1 home win in the Olympic Stadium over Inter. Next up is Samp. You win that 1-0, and then you go and win the last game of the season, I think, to Foggia. But you beat everybody who's big in the league. You beat them by scoring lots of goals. Stuff that at the time, this is what intrigued me. It must have felt for you, albeit in still as part of that steep learning curve where the pressure is on you to make every inch of judgment of space and timing and movement and organisation has to be perfect because everybody else has gone to party up front.
Absolutely.
You as a group and you as a player, you must have felt almost indestructible in that run of games under Zeman at the end of that season when you were playing Lazio's greatest football ever at that stage, probably.
Well, it was pretty attractive. Yeah, I mean, everybody was talking about it, and it was, but what we didn't have was we didn't have the strength to be able to play that kind of football over the whole season. Like most teams would have a bad month or 6 weeks, and in those 4 to 6 weeks we would lose points that we just couldn't gain again or catch up on the other teams that then would go on and win the Serie A title. So having experienced all that, you know, we finished, I think, the first year, we finished fifth, and then we finished third and second. But we were never actually close enough to win. So going back to, you know, my background, you know, I grew up in Switzerland with Italian parents. And, you know, I went to school and I have a BA diploma from Switzerland. And so then you moved to Italy 3 years. And I thought, somehow, you know, I've been here 3 years and we've not won a trophy in 3 years. You know, not the Coppa Italia, not the UEFA Cup, not the Serie A title.
You went to a semi-final, I think.
Yeah, we
went.
Lost
to Juve.
But we just didn't win a trophy. And I thought, you know, I'm 26. I thought I was stuck somewhere. You know, I needed a new challenge. I needed something new. I need something new professionally and personally as well, because I like to learn. I'm a person who like to learn. I like to study. So I wanted to challenge myself. I wanted to learn a new language, new culture, going into a different country that I don't know. And so that's the reason why I thought, you know what, this is becoming too comfortable for me. You know, I'm a regular in this team, I'm playing for the national team, you know, we're going to have another good season next year, but I'm not sure if we're ever going to be actually competitive enough to challenge for the Serie A title. So I threw myself really from a comfortable position into a new challenge because I want to learn. I wanted to improve myself and I wanted to enhance my horizon as well. Not just professionally, but personally as well. So Gullit called me, Ruud, who I knew from before because we played against each other a few times. And obviously the Premier League was founded in 92. And obviously we caught the eye of what the Premier League was doing. You know, most clubs were building new fantastic football stadiums, and you were reading about players going to England and so on. And when Ruud called me, it was quite an easy decision. I thought, you know what, that actually suits me. Again, ambitious club, Chelsea at the time. It was a very ambitious club. And they were, they had just signed Vialli. They were after me. And so I thought, that's the challenge I need.
You've explained the idea of not getting into a comfort zone and why you might avoid that. But you've described Lazio. The Serie A in those days was very demanding, strategically, tactically. I think criticism was very...
Still is.
Intense.
Still is, yes.
So you were being forged in a very tough atmosphere beyond the Zeman system in Lazio, because if I understand it correctly, as it still is now, the newspapers, the radio, the television would scrutinise every minimal mistake and probably look to criticise long before they praised. Is that fair, and did that impact you while you were there?
No, because you know we are humans, are animals of habit, so you get used to living in that kind of environment and you learn how to deal with it and how to exercise your profession within that environment. So that wasn't really an issue. Yeah, you know, the papers can be very critical at times in Italy, especially if things are not going right. But we had quite, good 3 years, to be honest. So yes, we got criticised a few times, but you deal with that. That wasn't really an issue for me or a problem. I was just looking for something new. I found that I was in a bubble that I needed to get out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't enough for me just to be comfortable there and play in Serie A. And I wanted to challenge. I wanted to challenge for titles, for trophies. I wanted to learn. And that's why I made the decision at really, 26 years of age. You're probably, those are the best years of your career. And I knew that it could be a risk for my position in the national team as well, but I took that risk on.
But you'd seen somebody do the opposite, somebody very different from you. You'd seen Paul Gascoigne move to Italy, and you played with him for at least...
2 years.
Two seasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Was he your first exposure to an English football person? Direct exposure? And what did you see in him in terms of the things we don't know? Because now his case is difficult because his personality hasn't been able to deal with things. But at that stage, he was a genuinely gifted, really genuinely gifted footballer, irrespective of how he treated his gifts. Did you have any connection with him? Did he seem a completely odd beast when you saw him in training and daily work?
I would describe him as different, as being different. I mean, already then you could see that he had some, he had some issues. Because he wasn't your regular guy, he was very volatile, and so there was no doubt in his football skills and ability. And training with him, he would do certain things in training that it would leave you, with your mouth open.
Genuinely?
Yeah, genuinely. And, he showed glimpse of his talent and quality that he had. But he never really managed to reach the level that that he could, and that everybody was expecting from him, that we saw when he was here in England. But I didn't look at him and think, oh yeah, this is English football. No, I didn't do that. I didn't know too much about the UK, about London.
Really?
I watched many cup finals, but even back in Switzerland, it was a big. It was a big event, the FA Cup final.
Seriously?
In Switzerland. Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't show the games, but the FA Cup final, it was always live on TV. And what I remember as well is that, the perception of England was that, it always rains in England. Every time I watched the FA Cup final, it was like a sunny day. Or nine times out of ten, it was like...
That's a good point. I don't remember a rainy FA Cup final.
It was like a sunny day, and you'd think, why do they always say that it rains in England? So, so that, you know, I didn't look at Gus and think, oh, you know, he is the example of an English football player, because I knew he was exceptional in everything, in good and bad.
What did you think of London? What did you think, having had your Swiss perceptions about Cup Final Day must be every day, when you arrive, like, for example, in this series, we've talked a lot about, you know, the training ground was, you know,
terrible.
Windy, noisy.
They didn't show me the training ground before I signed. They showed it to
this
me.
This wasn't in the brochure.
No, it was really bad. I mean, you know, Harlington, it's basically a building that belonged, or still belongs to the college, and the club was hiring it. And the funny day was the Wednesday. On the Wednesday, we had to leave the ground, I think, by 1 o'clock, we had to be out because the college students were coming in, so we had to be out and gone.
So students come in maybe to play hockey or rugby or...
Yeah. So, and the pitches were not very good, you know, because it wasn't meant... yes, that's...
We won't edit that out. That's for Graham only, not for Roberto.
The pitches were obviously looked after by the college, so they just kept them, you know, normally, not like, you know, they're perfect like now. And it was windy, and it was terrible.
And at least the showers were always hot, right?
Oh yes, they were.
Sometimes cold water, right?
Sometimes there wasn't a water. that happened as well. You know, there wasn't water. There wasn't any cold. Everything happened there. Everything.
Then was the bright part of Harlington the manager, Rutulit, sitting on when he injures his leg, sitting on his chair with his leg up because he's injured, and he comes to training. And does this phrase ring a bell? All right, lovely boys, let's have some fun.
Yes.
That was Rude's, not only his belief, he said it to you every day at training, right? And that must be a strange message to get after the strictness of Italian football, or didn't it seem strange?
Well, it wasn't as regimented as in Italy, because in Italy, obviously, you know, you train, you know, much more physically, much more tactically.
Often twice a day, tactically. Or sometimes twice a day.
Yeah, I mean, Zeman obviously was a little bit peculiar in that. You know, with him, we had twice a week. We had a double session. You know, so on a Friday, so we had a double session on a Wednesday and a double session on a Friday. But normally you always have one double session and every day training. It was very regimented. But I knew that Rude, obviously, you know, he played in Italy for many, many years, so he certainly knew what was required. And he was one of the main reasons why I obviously signed for Chelsea. Him and also, you know, the club that, you know, really showed that they wanted me, because obviously, you know, it was a club record fee at the time that they paid.
It was.
To sign me.
It was a huge fee at the time.
Yeah, it was. And also then, you know, when I met Ken Bates and Susanna Bates, and it felt really good, you know, it felt really like a family. And, you know, it was right. I felt it was right for me. So there you come, Ruth. Lovely boys, come on.
Did lovely boys make any sense to you at the time?
It was just something he used to say, you know. It was just, I don't know, something that he liked to say. I mean, he still says it today, you know, when he calls me.
It's taken from a sitcom.
Lovely boy, were you today, lovely boy?
It's from It Ain't Half Hot Mama, a sort of crazy, sort of crummy British sitcom with Windsor Davis saying, lovely boy, shoulders back, lovely boy. And where did Rude get it from?
I don't know where he got it from, but he was obviously, you know, laid back and Mr. Cool. And but his philosophy of football was very good, you know. I think we all enjoyed the fact that, you know, he brought a little bit of that Dutch philosophy, you know, put the ball on the ground, passing out from the back. You know, it was kind of innovative for England, you know, the kind of style of football. And I think it was recognised that we were playing some good football.
Hold up. normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Quite often you were 3-5-2?
We played 4-4-2 or 4. We didn't play with three at the back many times.
No,
it was 4-4-2 or 4-3-3.
And you would be asked, because either Eddie or Dennis could do more of your role at Lazio, and you were given much more creative attacking responsibility.
Yeah, Ruud totally changed that. Really, he just thought that maybe I could exploit my offensive side of my game a little bit more, and so he gave me the freedom to go forward more often, and he changed that a little bit, me, because I wasn't a player like that up to when I signed for Chelsea. So it paid off for the team. I think in the first season I scored, I don't know, something like
7 7 in the league, at least
7 in the league, 7 in the league. 9 or 10 goals in total. So it paid off. I mean, he saw something that maybe other managers didn't see.
Then you're an organised, intelligent learner and a confident man. But I want to ask you a question related to Xavi, who presumably you like Xavi's football, I'm guessing.
Oh, yes.
But when Xavi begins, he is the same position as you at Lazio. You called it holding. But I like to think of what he did, what Pep does, what you did, is more about maybe even organising or, a conductor. Rather, we say holding here in Britain, and it's a rubbish word. It doesn't mean anything.
In Italy, we say, you are the geometra, the architect, the one that gives the tempo to the team.
So let's say architect and holding. Okay. I like architect, because it implies...
You're the one that gives the tempo to the team. You're the one that organizes the team, that holds the team together, because obviously you're in the middle of it. So, if the fullback goes forward, you move a little bit to the right to cover the area. You stay behind the ball so you can always receive the ball. You have to switch the game if you see that there's space in there. And you have to also command from behind. If, you see that there's a possibility to press high, you go and shot and you command from behind. So I put it maybe a bit simplistic, that a holding player, but it's a very important role.
It's not your use of the word. I'm being critical of it. Here, we lack the imagination to recognise what that role is. At minimum, it's organising, and the architect is good because you build the foundations and then you build the stories upwards towards the top of the building.
For example, in Italy, with Sacchi and Nation, with Zeman as well, they told me that in that position, if you have more than two touches, I said, the whole house crumbles. He said, you need to have two touches. And for you to have two touches, you need to be able to receive the ball in the right, with the right body position. And already, you have already seen the picture where you want to go and what you want to do. So that was, daily training. That was for the midfield player, was, open up your body, receive the ball. The first touch has to be perfect,
yes,
so that you can play the second ball. I mean, with the second touch, you can play either short pass, a long pass, or you shoot, or whatever it is.
The right pass.
Or the right pass. And that's something that, really impressed me. And I teach also, or I coach my players when I'm coaching, that, in midfield and central, position, you need to kind of play two touches, you know, to give the tempo.
And managing risk, because one thing we haven't mentioned is that you have to be brave, you have to show, you have to be available all the time. But way in the back of your mind, you recognise that if you make the mistake...
Well, you see, I never thought about that, about if I lose the ball, because then maybe I would have not have the courage to demand the ball. I was always demanding, but I always wanted the ball. And obviously, you know, you make mistakes, but I never thought I would make a mistake.
From Switzerland to Wembley, you're sitting there. I didn't know what you were going to say, that the FA Cup was a big event in Switzerland, that even that you'd watched it with a kind of half... God, that's an interesting event. English football, English weather. And then you end up, poor old Middlesbrough again, at Wembley in the cup final.
Right.
Tell me, what does it mean? Getting there, the excitement, Wembley. Forgive me, you'd played at Wembley before?
No, that was the first time. It was the first time that I played at Wembley. Well, I mean, the whole week leading to the final, the FA Cup final, was a new experience for me, because obviously you have all the media commitments and so on, and, you know, new suit and the song, you know, record the song. And so it was all new and fun and exciting as well.
This is with Suggs, right?
Hmm?
Chelsea Blue Day.
Yeah. And so then you get to the hotel the day before the game, and again, it was quite a relaxed atmosphere in our hotel, you know. And again, that's probably because of Ruud, you know. He was just so chilled. So we were quite confident, you know, before the game, because we knew we had a good team, and if we turned up on the day, we had a good chance. So we were quite confident. But I didn't, not for one single second did I think that I would score a goal. I mean, so we went into the game, and obviously, you know, the quickest goal in the history happened to me, and Dennis Wise, you know, still claims that he made an assist in that final, which, you know, okay, if you do a pass a ball in your own half, if you call it an assist, I mean, okay, you can do that. But
I think that's you congratulating him for the quality of his pass, is it? In your own dry way.
Well, it doesn't qualify in the football.
His vision, the weight of the pass. Come on.
Anyway, so he passes me the ball, and I start running forward, and I saw Mark Hughes in front of me making a movement, and I'm thinking, no, I'm not going to give it to Mark Hughes. He's someone who's going to lose the ball or whatever. So I just pulled the trigger, and luckily the ball dipped a little bit. The goalkeeper was a bit in front of the goal line, and it was a great start to this final for us. And it certainly gave it even more confidence, and it settled a bit the nerves, because it was a final. It was important, you know, winning that. Would mean playing in European competition the season after, finishing the year with a trophy after 25 years for the club. So quite important, you know, actually very important.
Even though you weren't super nervous and it was a relaxed group and you were confident strategically against Middlesbrough, you were aware of the weight of expectation from fans who hadn't seen a trophy for a quarter of a century, at least.
Yeah, I was used to it, because I played the in Italy, so the Roman derbies and the games in Italy. The way
Chelsea Middlesbrough is okay in terms of pressure.
No, you can use it. I was 20, no, by that time I was still 26, just about to get to become to turn 27. But you get used to it. You don't think about that anymore.
But around you, there would have been nerves.
Yes, quite a bit of nerves.
The English players, for example, Wembley would have meant, as special as it was for you, who'd seen it as a kid in Switzerland. I didn't know that. For them, it must have been. If you talk about the goal taking away nerves, you're talking more about your teammates than you.
Yeah, the team. I mean, as a group, as a team. Yeah, obviously, you know, it was a great start. You know, early goal in the final, it sets you up, you know, for a good. I mean, for a high probability of winning the game.
Can you close your eyes? Can you feel the euphoria? Can you remember the feeling?
Oh yes. I mean, I lost my mind for like 10 seconds when I started running like a rabbit, like a crazy man. And you can see, obviously, you know, everybody was full of joy. I mean, the stadium was rocking. It was incredible.
One of the happiest sporting moments of your life?
Absolutely, yes.
At that stage, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I won the championship in Switzerland as well. That was a great year as well.
We have to be respectful of your time, so I'm going to skip a lot.
No, don't skip.
Well, we have to get to winning the Champions League. That's something that we need to talk about. But At Chelsea, one of the things that stands out for me is that you go on to win trophy after trophy. Ruud goes because Ruud goes in his own way. I remember there's a little metaphor in that later as a manager, you'll take over in a kind of difficult situation in the Champions League. At the point at which Luka takes over, the Vicenza game has gone badly in Italy. It's that European progress that you've talked about. You win at Wembley, you go into Europe, you beat Betis, you score against Betis. A good Betis side, coached by Luis Aragonés, who would go on to win 2008 with in charge of Spain. I don't think you play in a return leg at the bridge against Vicenza for injury or suspension.
No, I was suspended.
But it's going to get you to Stuttgart, coached by Yogi Löw. What is the can you retain the moment in which Ruud is gone? It's a huge shock. Luka takes over. The Vicenza game is 1-0. It has to be overturned in order to proceed in. It's the semi-final of Chelsea's sort of first chance at a final since 1971. And yet, from that day to winning in Stuttgart, it seems explosive. Everybody's confident again. What happened?
What happened?
Yeah. In human terms, in coaching terms.
What happened? I think that we were still playing a little bit roots football. So even though Luka was the manager, but he couldn't change it in such a quick time or turn it over. But it was a shock to the team when Ruud was sacked.
Shock to us.
It was very much liked by most of the team members. We weren't expected to lose in Italy, you know. We didn't really expect to lose there. We thought we were a good team, a strong team, and we could get a result there. But somehow they had a great day, and we probably didn't have such a good day. And so you find yourself overturning a 1-0, and it wasn't easy because they were well drilled, well organized. They didn't have individually very good players, but as a group they were very good. And they were very well organized, so we had to dig very deep. And again, that's where the spirit came out of that group, you know, with the players. And at some point during the game, you know, the tactical aspect of the game was just completely lost. It was just sheer emotions and drive and motivation and ambition to make the final, which got us to the final, you know. And
because the bridge that night was a volcano.
Oh, it was. And watch it from... I couldn't bear watching it.
Where were you? In the centre stand?
I'll tell you what. At some point during the second half, I couldn't bear watching it anymore. I left.
Literally?
I left. So nobody knows this, I think. I don't think I've ever told this, but I actually left and started to walk home. Because... I was kind of heartbroken that we wouldn't reach
that it was going to go away.
Yeah, it was because it looked like, I think it was 1-1 at that time.
Yeah,
they had scored the equaliser.
Yeah,
1-1. So we needed to score another two goals, and there wasn't much time left. So I couldn't bear it anymore. So I started walking home because I needed to be on my own. And then somewhere down the Fulham Road, I heard the roar, the 2-1, and I'm thinking, oof. 2-1, I'm thinking. Oh, so I'm thinking. So I keep walking, and I didn't hear because I was so far away by that time. I didn't hear the roar of the 3-1. So I'm thinking, oh, I mean, we won 2-1, but we're out of it. So by the time I got home, which it took me probably like half an hour, 25 minutes, by the time I got home, switched on the TV, I saw all the celebration.
Mark Hughes, 76th minute for 3-1. And you're in the final. And you go to Sweden for the final. Again, I went to report that. It was a controversial game from beginning because the manager puts Zola on the bench.
Well, to be fair, you know, Gianfranco was injured for a couple of weeks before the final, and he tried his utmost best to recover for the final. And he did recover, but it would have probably been a little risky or a gamble to put him from the beginning. I'm not sure, but don't know whether he would have lasted the whole game. So Luka left him on the bench, and you know, I think ultimately was the right move because, you know, he came on and scored the winning goal.
Stuttgart now are struggling and have been for a long time. But in players like Thomas Bertold, for example, Murat Yakin, Balakov, who my memory says was a very good player, Poshner, Freddy Bobic, Akpobori was a shooting star for a while and very fast, but managed by a guy who's gone on to do things quite well subsequently, and Joachim Löw. What were they like as cup final opponents?
Oh, they were very good. They were very good. I think they had a really good season in Germany as well, in the Bundesliga that year. And I don't know if you know, Graham, but Joachim Löw is a friend of mine.
I didn't know.
You see, you didn't know. We played together in Switzerland.
No.
In the little town of Schaffhausen, where I grew up.
Yes.
We played together in that team for, I think, a couple of seasons.
That is a shock. I like being surprised, but that is a surprise.
So, you know, we were former teammates when we met in the final in Stockholm.
Hopefully you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios 12 months ago. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day that they're available, it's time for you to join us, to become a socio, and for only £2.99 a month, you will get an exclusive big interview, plus regular mini-documentaries, not only all ad-free, but all featuring me and bringing you interesting, funny, and sometimes scandalous things from Spanish football. Go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter to unlock our entire archive. That means that once you join, you will have a treasure trove of interviews with funny, elite, interesting, revelatory, top-class footballers. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast. You will help to keep us on the road, interviewing people and sending that content for your delectation. If you go to the gym, you'll be slimmer. If you've got a dog, he or she will thank you. If you've got a TV, you can turn it off and listen to this instead.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.